You mean like sort of on the...
I guess I love you.
Tragedy struck.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
Ladies, nerds, and gentlemen, all of the above, welcome to the latest episode of the Nerdcast. I am your host, Iggy, along with my wonderful co-host, the Dark Lord, Gallo. Gallo, how's it been?
Everything's good, feeling good.
It's been a while since we've gotten to do this together.
Yeah, it has been. It's been like we've been two ships passing in the night here, getting everything else moving. But we've had some great fill-in guests and hosts. So missed you, bud. Good to have you on. Let's show them how it's done.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to dive right in because I think we talked about it. We watched this trailer in unison, Rust Belt Driller, and I think this is the most fantastically bizarre trailer I've seen in years. And so I have millions of questions for this wonderful trio that we've already started hanging out with ahead of recording. So let's bring them in one at a time. There's David R. Williams. How are you doing, David?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. We've got Tilgi.
Hiya.
And Aaron as well. So welcome, everybody. It is
the trailer was bizarre. Wait till you see the movie.
I mean, that's where we got to start. So this is it premiering at Dances with Festivals, or has this been at a couple festivals before?
No, that was it. That was our world premiere.
World
premiere, midnight, or on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That itself is a story.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
There you go.
Walking out of the theater at like 2:30 in the morning, Hollywood Boulevard is like zombie apocalypse. Yeah. Maybe meets Escape from L.A.
Yeah,
it's just
it's an interesting mashup of you've got street vendors, you've got a ton of tourists, you've got homeless people everywhere. You've got really bad costume characters. Like there was this guy who you could tell like 20 years ago was like a really big bodybuilder, beautiful head of hair, nice looking guy. He's got the biggest rock hard beer gut you can imagine. And he was dressed as Captain America. So every time we pass him, I go, oh, there's fat in America. I mean, like, it's just these people. And it's like, I don't know. It was bizarre. Also, Kevin Spacey's star and Donald Trump's star are literally next to each other, so I found that amusing.
So it's a collection of characters and stories, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Which I think just Rust Belt Driller is going to add to the story. Like we said, it's fantastically bizarre. Why doesn't one of y'all give us a description before we get going any further into it?
All right. So the concept of this kind of came about last March, I believe it was. Driller Killer by Abel Ferrara was on Amazon Prime, and Dave and I were talking about it, and we both watched it, and then doing a little research into it. I'm a big fan of Abel Ferrara with Snatchers and Bad Lieutenant and stuff like that, but I'd never seen Driller Killer. So doing a little bit of research into it, I found that it's technically in the public domain, because they never renewed the copyright for it. So I said, you know, we could take this concept and we could update it for 2020 and coronavirus and just everybody on their cell phones and, you know, just all that kind of paranoia stuff. And we could do the same story. And as we kind of started working it out, Dave suggested that I take it in a little more of a unique turn. So I did. But that's where it is. And that's kind of how it came about. And I mean, it's got elements of Driller Killer in there, Videodrome, Session 9, Perfect Blue. I mean, there's a Blade Runner. There's a ton of nods, homages in there, little lines or looks, Cruising, massive Cruising homage in there. So it kind of took all those and paired that up with the concept of that paranoia and that isolation and getting a lot of my own personal mental rage out. A lot of it is based on my struggles that I've had myself, you know, from a mental health aspect over the last 10 years or so of my life. And I was fortunate that these guys came with me for the ride and trusted me with that. And here we are.
All right. So it sounds like Aaron and David, y'all had an early conversation. So Tilgi, when it came to you, what was your first reaction?
Well, initially, David had reached out because I had intimacy coordinated film for him, like in the year before. I don't know, time is elusive. So he had reached out to me about that. And then I started talking to Aaron, and Aaron and I have worked together for a long time, longer than I've known David. And the idea of me coming on as a co-director sounded very appealing to me also, because I read the story and I know Aaron, and I read the, when I read the script, I could see it. Like, it was like, oh, like, I know that I have something value add for this. So I came, and that was probably like maybe 3 months after they had been working together, because they were finishing the script and, you know, figuring out like budgeting and like gathering things together. But I had kind of been peppered in like here and there, like asking for recommendations for different crew members and stuff like that. So I was kind of like helping, and then it became more official after the conversation with David and Aaron.
All right. This sounds like it just naturally snowballed into what it is then, which usually is the most exciting way for a project to get moving. At least made those initial steps easier, because I'm sure the rest of the steps weren't as simple, I guess would be the way to put it.
No, but I think there was a lot of synchronicity. I'll just share that we have two lead actresses, and the day that everyone was supposed to, that some people flew in from out of town, and the day that these two were supposed to fly in, which was 2 days before shooting, one of them couldn't come. And so we had to replace a lead actress literally with like in a day. And it turned out to be, she turned out to be like the best, most, like the so talented, so useful. We ended up creating like another team. So we only shot for like, what was it? 8 days. It felt like 8 days, but it might've been 9 days. So she was able to like, when she wasn't acting, she was able to like form a small team that we called Team Tokyo, with me and a couple other crew members, so we could go and get shots done. Like, it was like so synchronistic. And I feel like there was a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, you think like, oh my God, we lost our lead actress. But actually it turned out to be like a blessing from the universe that allowed us to finish the film, you know? And
she bailed on us 6 hours before I was supposed to pick them up at the airport.
Wow.
Does that kind of word spread fast when a situation like that takes place, when you have somebody lined up and you lose them? I mean, even if you're not looking to obviously, you know, to burn bridges at that point, is that bridge burnt? Like, people will come to know that?
It's well burnt. It's well burnt.
There are other factors too. I mean, everything happens, you know, my mother just died. Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, we'll figure it out.
Right. I
mean, you know, take a day and then show up. But this was not, and without speaking too poorly of someone, I mean, it was bad. And it seemed like it just became nerves and a bunch of other stuff like that. And the rehearsal process, we treated the rehearsal process like a theater project, because of the distance, but also because we had the time. And Tilke and I are both theater trained actors originally. So we had Zoom sessions with everybody, and Tilke was acting as our acting coach. And, you know, the performance was not going to be up to snuff anyway. So like Tilke said, I mean, it was the biggest blessing possible. I mean, that was things happen sometimes and they actually work out.
Got it. Now, the part that Iggy and I got to see, David, was this trailer.
Yes.
For the movie. And I mean, it was, it took me back. I think the concept that you used, the infomercial, to mix it in there with the clips was really, you know, I mean, it was so poorly done, it was beautiful, you know. And I think that was exactly what you were going for. It's like, just throw it back as far as you can, you know. And when you talk about homages and everything else, right when the part comes up in the trailer, but wait, there's more. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I don't know what's going on, but this is amazing. Whose idea was the trailer to put it together that way?
Well, what is the infomercial part of the movie too, or is just the
trailer? Yeah, it is. Infomercial is a huge part of the movie.
Yeah. The audience loved that. It, you know, it was the actor is Andy Rich. I think, Andy Rich, and he is just phenomenal. And when we were shooting that, we were just cracking up. I was on the floor laughing most of the shoot there. Or, you know, he's just fantastic. And he's it's a pretty big part of the movie. It's probably a good 15 minutes, but it's spaced out. So, but it's a good chunk of the film.
Yeah, it's important. It's important to the through line. And to answer your question, that I put that together. That was kind of the concept for the trailer, and just kind of that was kind of how it was shaping up. You know, what do we do to explore this, but also make it a little bit different? One thing that a lot of people have said is that our trailer doesn't really give a lot away. You know, they said that, you know, a lot of people have said that it doesn't, you know, that too often, you know, trailers today kind of tell you the whole thing. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I was able to kind of make it a little bit different than that. And a lot of people are saying, you know, what is this about? What's going on? They say that after they've seen the movie too, which is but I think that's part of the charm of everything. And
saying that about the movie. What was that about? What did we do?
Yeah. So,
I don't get it.
But I think that runs through the, you know, that's the through line. So I think it works well.
Well, it's perfect. I think that's what Gal is hitting on, is you open, for those that haven't seen it yet, you can obviously find the trailer online. But if you open the trailer, it starts as this, it's a grainy, kind of cheesy, and the women are just over the top the way they're acting in this trailer. And then, like you said, the other shoe drops and it's actually really good quality looking, and then gore happens and you get like these dark sequences and it's flashing from scene to scene. And you're exactly right, Aaron. I have no clue what overall is going in the movie. All I know is that there was a lot of weird twisted stuff, and it piques your interest. You're like, okay, what is happening? I have to know what's happening. Cause I left that trailer being like, okay, that was my first thing. Is the infomercial a part of this, or was it just for the trailer? What's going on with these crazy masks? Yeah. What's going on? There are saws going through body parts that in the trailer itself, if this is showing in the trailer, I can't imagine what kind of gore is in the movie. So yeah, it definitely sets up to pique your interest as opposed to give you too much. So I think, well done. Well edited
and,
on the trailer.
When we were doing the prep for the movie, Iggy and I normally exchange emails with you know, just the basics and everything else. And part of it was the IMBD and the trailer. I'm not going to lie. I was like, because sometimes, we are afforded that opportunity. I was looking for the movie link. I'm like, I need more. I need more. Where is this? I need to see this, at least half of it, just to know what's going on, you know, and it really, whatever the trailer really does suck you in. It really does grab you. And it's like, okay, even if you're like, whoa, what just happened? You're like, you want more, you want to know, you want to piece it together. You want to, you know, like Iggy's valid question there about was the infomercial a part of the movie, or, you know, was that just used to show, you know, clips without giving too much away? But, you know, it's another, you know, another question answered that the infomercial is actually a big part of the movie. So that was really, really cool. You guys do, I'm sure everybody here wears a lot of hats. While you're trying to make these productions happen, in order for it to be able to be done, who was all a part of the special effects, the gore in this movie?
I feel like we probably all were, in some way or another, but. I was, you know, we had lost some of our PAs due to sickness. And so I was sort of helping Jordan Sanders, who was our special effects on the ground at one point. And I was sharing with you guys earlier that I am very creeped out and disgusted by gore. So it's like, makes me like, I'm like, oh my God, this is so cringy. But, you know, it was fun to embrace that cringiness and, you know, we were building some like skin bubbles on Aaron's arm for the character, not to give anything away, but, and then, you know, just all lots of body parts, like, you know, that I was like having to like bloody up and innards and just like really like sort of diving into it like an art project. So I'm sure that sort of took away the movie magic for me of it. Not, I've been in horror films before, just maybe not as many body parts and gore happening. So, so in that way, it was challenging, but like in a fun way where I was like, okay, I'm just gonna like go with this. And like, I feel like I'm gonna get sick, but I'm not. So, you know, because if you're behind the camera, you can remove yourself from it in a way, but you're like hands in it, you know.
And how many times did you tell someone, it's not real, it's not real, it's not real? It's not real.
Well, I think
I was, yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say, as you talk about, it's everything you're telling us, midnight showing LA, the gore in the trailer is not even close to what's going on. I think your comment there of, I've worked with gore before, not like this. This movie, like I said, for horror and gore fans, you should be hooked 15 minutes into this podcast. That's all I can say right here. Y'all are definitely letting us know that it's there. I do, before we get too much further, because we didn't dive too deep into basically the synopsis. So Aaron, you actually wrote this. I've got it right here. Ren Maxwell seems to have everything going for him. He has a manager that cares. He's good enough at his craft to have private gallery screenings. He seems to live in a nice looking house, and he has a committed, streetwise and beautiful partner in Carol. But Ren has been followed all his life by something dark. And now, with the chaos of the modern world and his own inner horrors, that evil has finally gotten close enough to reach out and touch. What follows in the next few days will paint the city of Buffalo, New York, a whole new canvas, mostly flowing red. So I think, yeah, we are as deep into horror as you can get, is what it sounds like by everything y'all are sharing. So what, Aaron, you shared a lot about what, you know, some of those titles that inspired this film. I don't know. And y'all can go whichever order you want. What are some of that inspiration that got you to this point to be just making these types of films?
Sure. Yeah. I think that, I mean, I've always been attracted to darker stories. I root for the villain almost every single time. You know, I'm a big fan of psychological stuff. You know, people ask me what my comfort movie is, and I always tell them Seven. And so some people laugh and the others need an explanation. You know, big fan of movie, like I said, like Session 9, Videodrome, Lost Highway, massive fan of Lost Highway, which I think is David Lynch's best film. You know, so that little bit of mystery, that little bit of, you know, just that little bit of uncertainty. We set out to make a movie that was a psychological horror movie with the grossest kills possible. So we wanted to blend, you know, the subgenre of the subgenre of the subgenre of the subgenre into one thing. The other thing, like I said a little bit earlier, I've had a lot of challenges, mentally, emotionally over the last, you know, 10 years of my life. This is, you know, these are kinds of things that I've dealt with and been able to manifest on a page. And I do still have the drill. So, you know, we'll see what happens down the road.
I'm locking the door.
But I also, you know, I come from a very religious upbringing. My father was a Baptist minister. My mother is very devout Christian as well, which is not a condemnation of anything. And my parents are awesome. My dad is actually, both of my parents are very supportive of what I do. And my father is one of the critics I trust the most with my work. But there's a lot of things, especially growing up as a pastor's son and seeing a lot of things that happen, and the falsehoods of religion and Christians and, you know, all that kind of stuff, that impacts you. There's a lot of things. There's the character that the character that's followed Ren his whole life is actually based on an incident that happened with my father. I was probably 5 years old, and it was a hot summer day like it's been here in Buffalo this whole year. And it was Sunday, so we were getting ready for church, and I always have to dress up in the suit and the tie, even at that young age. And I was just hot. I was just warm. I was uncomfortable, and I begged him to not make me wear the suit. And he wouldn't do it. And I begged him, and I begged him, and I begged him. He said, all right, fine. Well, if you're going to do that, then you're going to dress up like a little English boy from the 1800s. And so he let me wear shorts, and he forced me to wear knee socks. And he made me sit in the front pew, and he humiliated me. And my head was down the whole time, and I was just, it was a ruining moment for like a 5-year-old kid. And, you know, that's the kind of story that sometimes writers are able to take. And, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff in there. That's a lot of real stuff.
I think it's amazing, though, that, I mean, you're sharing a lot, which thank you for opening up, and will probably give a lot of people who are going to see this movie insight. But I think it's fascinating. You kind of write it off as nothing, but the fact that you've been able to channel that and make it into an art and, you know, something that can be shared on screen as either entertainment or as possibly something that could be impactful if it impacted you is pretty amazing. So definitely, I think people shouldn't lose sight of that. So hopefully they get to hear a little bit of that story.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you know, I mean, Dave and Tilke have both known me a long time, and they've both been there through a lot of struggles that I've had. And it sucks, man. You know, it sucks when things just aren't right, and you don't feel right, and you don't, you know, it's difficult. It makes it difficult to interact with other people. It, you know, it drives people away, all that kind of thing. And, you know, I finally rediscovered myself a little bit over the last few years. And so that's how I was able to kind of transfer this out. And, you know, everybody feels alone sometimes, and some people more than others. And it sucks. It really sucks. So if I can impart any of that to tell someone that there's a way to get it out, you know, it's as good for me as it is for you to be able to watch it. I mean, that's really what it's come down to. But I also think that shows in the script. I think that shows in the film overall, the dedication of everybody. Everybody. I mean, it was such a team effort. But I did scare a couple people because we were sitting in the green room area. Dave walked in on this, actually. A couple of the guys and I were sitting there because we were waiting for a scene. And they asked me where the inspiration for their characters came from. And I said, I'll tell you. I don't know if you really want to know. They said, no, tell us. So I told that story, and I told another one about that character, and Dave walked in, and they were just really quiet after that. I said, you asked, and I told Dave what happens, and he just laughs. He goes, yeah, well, there it is. So,
so well, there it is.
How's that again?
There we go. Well, Eric, it sounded like you grabbed a lot of inspiration from life, but also films to make it. David, what about you? What are some of the things that inspired you to get into making not only movies, but this type of stuff?
Oh, jeez. I think the first film I ever saw was probably a horror film. In fact, it was Crawling Eye, an old Hammer film back in the day. So I was probably 4 or 5 years old when I first saw that. And it just sparked a lifelong love of horror films. So, I mean, everything from the Universal monster movies to the Hammer remakes to the more extreme Euro trash stuff, the Grindhouse and Ruffies and all of that kind of B-movie, C-movie, D-movie genre. You know, people making movies with very little money and very little time, very little resources, but just doing the best they possibly could within those limitations. But at the same time, like probably in the 90s, I discovered like people like Jean-Luc Godard and Bergman and Michelangelo and Antonioni. So there's this weird art house, grind house dichotomy that's going on inside my mind all the time, where I'm looking at things from the gutter up, and then I'm looking, you know, down, where, okay, how do we create something that's bloody and gory and grimy and gritty and references 42nd Street, New York in the 1980s, I guess. But at the same time, references European movies of, you know, the 60s and the 70s.
You mentioned, I'll keep asking for inspiration. So, Tilke, I'll ask you here in a second. I don't want to leave you, but you brought up Bergman, and I'm in. But I have to ask, because you say, you know, I know it's a little more art house. It's definitely more classic, but I think there's a lot of Bergman that can inspire this type of stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Does your inspiration draw from the obvious point, you know, like the Seventh Seal, or is it something else Bergman that you grab from too, or all of the above?
The Virgin Spring, certainly.
I got that one too. I love that.
The Silence. Seventh Seal, obviously. Face to Face as well.
Persona
for sure. Definitely that. There's a lot of, I think if Bergman wasn't making art films, he'd be making horror films.
I agree.
I
think that's
absolutely
very true. And I do like, I am heavily influenced by Michelangelo and Antonioni, and certainly the films that he did in the 60s, films that are basically about nothing. So just, you know, people wandering through the world and their lives, and there's no connections. They're just wandering, looking for something, and they're not even sure what they're actually looking for. Yeah. So I think actually some of that is in this movie, where the main character, I think he's looking for something, and I'm not even sure he knows exactly what it is.
Right.
But then he finds the drill. Maybe the drill is the holy. I have the drill, the holy grail. I found what I'm looking for, and now I'm going to put it to good use.
And it was David, all downhill for the rest of the cast there, but uphill for the audience, right?
David, how did you get started with the behind the camera stuff? Were you originally an actor? Were you originally, even aspiring to do anything else, or how did that come about?
I always wanted to make movies. Like I said, you know, I saw that first horror film and loved that. And a friend of mine had an old Super 8 camera. And so he had a camera, we had a roll of film, and somehow I suddenly realized, oh, I can actually make a movie with this stuff. Up until then, never thought of it. But then I hit, oh, camera, film, film in the camera. We can make a movie. And we made a movie. And it was awful, but, you know, it was the first one. And you're like, somewhere. Ooh. So, yeah, it's like a drug, really. It absolutely is. And then you just want to do it more and more. You want it to be bigger and bigger. And so, you know, 30 years later, here we are.
Right. That's awesome. Fantastic.
And now, Tilke, I don't want to lose sight of your inspiration, because I'm really interested in what you have to say, because you've definitely established you're not a fan of gore, and here you are working in it. So what has led you to this point? What are the inspiration things that have led you here?
Well, Aaron and I have known each other for a long time, and we both sort of have this love of the absurd, of thinking things are funny that maybe others don't think are funny, right? Like, this whole movie's a comedy, but
I'd be okay with I'd be okay if someone told me that they laughed through the whole thing.
I mean,
we've watched it so many times now going through it. Yeah, I could see where someone could laugh through the whole thing.
So, our kind of people, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that trail.
Laugh at this poor character's struggle. When I read the script, I was reading it from this like this sort of like American Psycho like absurdity of just like, is this happening? Is this not happening? Like what you guys felt when you watched the trailer.
Right.
Like what's going on? And I really like that. And to me, that kind of drew me into it. And then because yes, the gore thing isn't what drew me to it. What drew me to it is the complexity of character work. And so what is the internal struggle of like Aaron's character, Ren? Like what is that seed of his struggle, and how are we gonna create this? Like, yes, it's Aaron, but also how are we going to, because like he shared, it's from his mind, right? But how are we going to draw that out of him and create this character, Ren? And so that was one of the reasons that I think we were excited to have this additional extra time to work on the character, all the characters, but like very important for, and I've said this in other interviews, like very important when Aaron is wearing all these hats, but he's also the lead. A lot of times what happens is the acting part doesn't get prioritized because you're scrambling. Oh, I lost an actor. I did this or whatever. But we had built in already that we were going to work and develop it. And I feel really proud of the work that he did because we gave ourselves the time. And so I think what drew me to it and like what my inspiration always is coming from my theater background is like these really like well-drawn complex characters like Tennessee Williams or Sam Shepard. Some classics, just to name some like classics that people might know. And so that's kind of where I came in. But I started out as an actor. I've been acting since I was a little kid. I went to a performing arts high school. I have a graduate degree in performance. But I do like a lot of other stuff because I love storytelling. Like for me, I just like love the storytelling aspect. Like if I can like work with the actors and be an acting coach and like help them create like this amazing character, that's awesome. If I can be behind the camera and like create shots where like we're bringing out all that work and like, you know, with the gesture of the actors and like, you know, with the team, like creating like the lighting and like, you know, everything that we're doing, like that's very exciting to me too. Or if I'm in front of the camera and I'm creating the character, like that's awesome. I'm also a writer. So I've had the experience of writing something and like also acting in it. And so for me, I'm just like drawing inspiration and like doing things that I feel like are just adding to storytelling. And so like, for me, that's just like, how can we tell like the best, most exciting story, like the goriest, but also the most psychological thrilliest.
Andrilliest. I love it. I think one thing that's meshed with all three of you great is what is my favorite thing is that obviously this is a job and it's gonna be a job, but y'all keep using the words create and creative and creating. Like to you all, it's the craft, it's the full art form, which makes me even more excited about this because then it's going to show the passion that's put into this project. Am I picking that up correctly? It feels like y'all love just doing this and pouring into it in terms of creating. Yep. And absolutely. I think David, like you said, it's a drug. Then it becomes a drug because you just want to create more.
It's an addiction. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We want to create more.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the trust factor is huge too. You know, Dave and I have worked together countless times. Tilke and I have worked together countless times. You know, this doesn't happen, like it doesn't happen without Dave, right? And then it doesn't happen the way it happened without Tilke and everybody else. There's a lot of trust between us and, you know, they both gave me the freedom to explore things. They both have their, you know, Dave is the grittiest, grimiest, most awesome production guy you can imagine. he just dives in, and he's detail oriented, and he's annoying, and he's obnoxious, and it works. And you know, but he really is. Like I've never met anybody else that works that hard in the pre-production process than Dave. It's incredible. And you know, Tilkey, as an acting coach alone, was invaluable for the production, let alone for doing the second unit stuff and taking some situations over. And you know, Dave's over here, so Tilkey's over here, and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of trust. It's all team, and you know, and like Dave said, you know, it for me, I'm never 100% unless I'm doing something creative. You know, whether it's my own project or somebody else's, I never feel 100% like that. And I think that, you know, artists, even in this time where artists of any kind aren't necessarily as appreciated as we'd all love to be, I think we have a responsibility to share that and to, you know, do things to inspire people or horrify people or make people laugh or whatever, or all three, because it's a comedy.
Established.
See you all laugh, but it took a second. You all laugh. No, but yeah, I mean that's what it is. You know, the work is the work is the work, and that's the whole point, I think. And that's what makes a passion project. And at this level, you know, with budget and all this other stuff, you have to have that before anything else. Otherwise, I don't think it's going to work the way it can.
Great, great. Yeah, I think that's exciting. Gallo, you look like you were going to say something. Sorry, I jumped in.
I'm always wanting to say something. You know how I am. But I mean, this has been so much fun because the experience that we've had with the last few of these that we have done has been a lot of these, a lot of the indie type, you know, smaller budget film guests. And the one thing that I have seen, Iggy, I don't know if you felt the same way, is this incredible passion for the actual art, for the actual part where you create, where I think it's almost something that gets lost in all of this with the big productions and the final wraps and the final edits. You know, when I realize, you know, something as what I've been through is we just recently took on the project of remodeling our kitchen, and we completely gutted it, and then we built it the way we wanted to, and now it's done. And I'm like, you know, there is so much work behind there that no one will ever see. Mm-hmm. That was where all the blood, sweat, and tears went, you know, but I know, and I take a lot of, there's a lot of satisfaction in that for me. And I gotta believe that when you guys sit and screen this film, that you remember what was happening, who was doing what, who was holding the camera, who was saying what, who was wearing what, you know, the part where you almost laughed, the part where, you know, you almost didn't do that shot, you know, all of those things. And I gotta imagine that's where the actual rewards come for people who are truly passionate for creating. And I was just wondering, do you guys agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at the movie, and you remember how long that took, and how tired you were, and how much blood there was, and how sticky and sweaty you were, and but all that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care. What I care about is making the movie. That is my top priority over everything else. Is making the movie.
And you got to leave it. You got to leave it all there. I mean, that's, you know, during the whole time, I mean, Dave and I clashed over a couple things a couple times, and you know, that's going to happen. And someone told me once,
right.
don't bring tilt. But you know, we clashed over some things a couple times, and you know, that's going to happen. And somebody told me once on another project, they said, you know, if the people that are kind of leading the way, if they don't ever clash about anything, then they're not really passionate about it. You know, if you're not, you know, if there isn't some kind of conflict to ultimately make the thing better, then it's, you know, where is the passion behind it? And, you know, and we're friends now, and we'll always be friends. As long as you leave it all out there, that's okay. You know, I'd rather argue with Dave every day on a production and have it be what we've achieved and then move on to be able to work together again. I mean, that's fine, you know, and that's kind of how I think it's all supposed to go. Now, Tilke and I have never had that issue.
Dave, he's calling you out, man.
Why don't I believe that?
What's that?
Why don't I believe that?
No, that's actually really true. Well, so I'll tell the story. So Tilke had moved back to Buffalo after living on the West Coast for quite a while. She had moved back here for some personal issues, and so she started auditioning for the theater scene. And we ended up doing three shows back to back to back with each other. So we were literally together almost every day for 6 months. And we did a murder mystery that was kind of like a Clue kind of thing. We did Sam Shepard and Patti Smith's Cowboy Mouth. And then we did a Neil Simon kind of like romantic family comedy at a dinner theater. So we went from, you know, hiding people in couches, hiding bodies in couches, and all of us wanting to kill the stage manager in real life of that production. That was interesting. 'Cause she was terrible. But and then we went from that to playing Sam Shepard and Patti Smith and calling each other the most colorful four-letter words you can imagine. And then, you know, kind of being this goofy little dinner theater where these old people are eating lasagna and trying to talk to us as the actors in the story. You either love somebody forever at that point, or at least one of you is literally dead. So here we are. So it's,
no one's dead yet.
Yeah.
But Aaron still has the drill.
He still has the drill. We'll see how many Rust Belt Driller. One, we've got one down. Two, three, four before here I die, right?
Now, I think you mentioned something, though, Aaron. You talked about Tilke working together for 6 months straight. Tilke, I think you brought up it was 8 or 9 days earlier. One thing we always like to hear is you know, even short time or long time, it sounds like it people usually on these types of sets become family. So even it only being 9 days, was it still just hard after those 9 days to kind of to walk away from everybody else for a while and not know that you weren't going to wake up and see that same family the next morning?
I think that, and Aaron and David might agree with me, they might not, but I think when you do these intense projects, you know, which a film is, and you're with this same group of people for so long, so that's like kind of any art project, there's like this euphoric adrenaline high, you know, you've worked 16 hour days sometimes, like it's crazy, right? You're on this high, you're with, like, you're making this thing, you know, you're passionate about it, as Aaron mentioned, and you're excited. And then, and I've noticed this with myself, I like get very depressed and have a huge come down after I like finish a movie or finish a show. Like, I have to like take some time for myself and like reset my system because of like all of the like roller coaster ride that it's been, you know. It is like David said, it's a drug. So you've had your drug, right? And like your drug's gone now. Now you're like, okay, I need to take some time, reset my system. And then, you know, you're moving on to do other things, but it's not like editing and things like that, but it's just not the same as being like with that many people all the time.
I mean, that's a great way to put it. I don't know. Aaron, David, anything to add?
No, I think that's pretty much on the nose. Dave and I weren't really afforded that luxury in the same way because we still had so much to do, obviously, for the production. And Tilke's been in that too. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I thought afterwards was like, I got to go to work tomorrow again.
Back to the real world. Yeah, you gotta go back to the real world.
I'd much rather be killing you.
There you go. Well, I think, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
So I think we could all relate that the day job part of what we have to do in order to keep these type of things and our projects and our passions going, you know, it's also part of what has to get worked into to all of this. You guys are you know, very passionate and you throw yourself into these projects, but then you may eventually have to, you know, then you just kind of have to bounce back to reality, I guess. And, you know, it's how long does it take Aaron and David, let's just say, or you know, when you have to do this, how long does it take to reacclimate, and how long do you want to stay in that before you want to like, okay, it's time to do something. It's time to do another project.
Yeah. Like for this, for me, it took about 2 weeks. We put in, the three of us and a couple other people, we easily put in 120 hours worth of work over 9 days or whatever it was, easily. So, you know, then going right back into it and having to work 8 hours a day and everything else, you know, I probably took 2 weeks where I worked, I slogged through work, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, got back into it, started to edit, started going through notes, all that kind of thing. I actually just started working on another script. I have a couple different ideas, but the way that I like to write these days, I just let things kind of come to me, percolate, think about it without even really writing it down. And my mind's just been clear enough in the last 2 or 3 weeks where I've been able to start actually doing that. It really has taken that long. I mean, we've still been actively working on this movie too, you know, promoting it and getting ready to go to the screening and, you know, and all that kind of thing, and final edits and submitting it here and doing this and that. But I mean, it's been the last year and a half of my life. It's been the last year and a half of Dave's life, and just slightly less than that for Tilkin. So, you know, I mean, that's a massive commitment. And, you know, you can only do so much. And as much as I want to be creating all the time, especially with writing, for me personally, I have to really be feeling it. I have to be into it. I have to have an idea. I also have to be able to have the energy to sit down again in front of a computer and say, all right, my mind is clear enough to get this going. Because otherwise, it's just, you know, you might as well just be typing, you know, all work and no play, all work and no play, all work and no play, all work.
Another horror reference for the fans there.
And there we go. So,
perfect. Awesome. Well, what is that? I think we're going to get close to tight on time here. So we've got to ask one. The first one is obviously for this movie, Rust Belt Driller, Dances with Films. Where to next? We got any other festivals lined up, or are we still applying to festivals, or are we talking about a release yet?
We are playing at the Buffalo International Film Festival on October 9th at 9:45, I think, which is the big festival in our, well, we have a couple really great festivals here, but Aaron and David are alumni of this festival. I ran this film festival for 5 years with some other people, but I was one of the key players. And so it'll be exciting for us to show the film there. So, and just waiting for the right distributor to offer us the right deal.
We are talking to a few people, but we're waiting for the right deal. I think we've got something here. I don't think it's just your run of the mill horror film. It's a little better than that.
I can honestly say, just from the trailer, I felt like I've never seen anything like that before in my life. You know, and we've been following, you know, as part of all of our nerdums, I think that the four core people that do the recast now, we're all, you know, we are big fans of horror as part of it, the things we like. And you know, the gorier and the B, C, D, the better for us. You know, we really appreciate that. It is fun. And that I can honestly tell you that if that trailer is part of your selling point, man, somebody's gonna jump, because that is one hell of a trailer. It's like, you know, I'm telling you, I was almost waiting for him to say, but wait, there's more. And then he actually said it. And I was like, oh my God, yes. Yes. Whoever did this is a genius. No, now is not the time to be humble, Aaron.
I try to live by that. No, I appreciate it. And everyone's been very generous and very gracious. We've had a lot of great reviews. We've had 7 reviews already. Six of them are awesome. One of them is tepid, but that tepid review still says some things that they like. And it's one of those reviews that makes me usually go, okay, well, now I want to see it because I don't understand what you're saying. You like this and this and this, but you're not, you know, but you're saying, well, you know. But even from someone who clearly isn't a fan of the genre, you know, they still had some nice things to say. And, you know, it's just been, it's been great. It's been cool these last 2 weeks. We got to go to Los Angeles for a premiere. We're doing these kinds of things. It's kind of been like living it for the last couple weeks. So, fantastic. You know, and I'm very proud of this. I'm proud of everybody. The whole team was amazing. And I've said it 100 times and I'll say it again, the female presence on this film could not have happened without the women involved, Tilke and Veronica stepping in at the last hour, and Jillian, who Dave has worked with many times before. I've edited with her before. And I was, you know, I had no one else in mind for the part of Carol than her. You know, we explored a couple other options, but I was very selfish in saying that I wanted to act with her and work with her. But all of the girls, all the gals on this film, it just doesn't happen the same way without them. The female presence was so strong, diverse cast all around. So I'm very proud of that, and I think we've done something really good. And I think it definitely deserves that recognition, and we're getting it, and that's an awesome feeling.
So. Awesome.
Awesome. Well, while they're waiting to learn more, tell us where our fans can find you all online to learn when those future festivals and distribution opportunities show up.
Sure. You can find us on Facebook. That's our main social media, facebook.com, obviously, Rust/Rust Belt Driller Film. We do have a Twitter as well, RB Driller Film. It's not super active, but it's there. And then there is rustbeltdriller.com, too, that I'm kind of updating and getting everything into. So we do have an official website that's a little under construction, but that's there. Like Dave said, we'll be at the BIFF at the Buffalo International, and we do have the project out to a lot of other places that we will be expecting. There you go. That we will be expecting, to hear from, you know, in the near future. So hopefully we can kind of keep that trend going. And that's it. So yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, it has been a pleasure. It has been an honor. I'm telling you one thing, as Gallows mentioned, we walked in excited about what we're hearing and just hearing about the passion, the creativity, and the gore, to be honest, that's behind this. My interest is even further peaked. So for those of y'all that are into that stuff, Rust Belt Driller is the movie, rustbeltdriller.com. And as he mentioned on Facebook and Twitter too, but definitely check it out. I think as Gal pointed out, this is it. This is the independent movie industry is it. These are the people we need to be supporting because this is where the blood, sweat, and tears get poured into it. And this is the stuff that we love here at Project Nerd. And I know a lot of our fans do too. So,
and if you guys haven't seen the movie yet, so you haven't actually seen the movie
properly, right?
So we'll get you a link.
Link to the movie.
And if you want, you bring us back on and we can talk. We can really talk about it.
Here, let's do it this way. So for our fans and whoever watches this, so as they'll know, there's more coming. You guys have at least one film festival coming up, and then a second one in Buffalo, correct? So sometime in October, this movie will already be out in two festivals.
Yeah.
Okay. How about we plan to have a return talk about both the festivals and dive more into the actual movie sometime in mid-October, maybe early November before the holidays.
Great. That sounds awesome. I want to hear more about what you guys think about the infomercial. We have more to say.
That infomercial is amazing. Well, here's the thing.
Well, hold on, y'all. I'm going to close this out on the podcast.
Okay.
More with these guys. On the back end.
All right.
For those that are listening, it's been a pleasure. Aaron, David, Tilke, check out their works. You can obviously find more online in Rust Belt Driller. It's where it's at. And if you're in Buffalo, obviously October 9th, you've already got plans. So go check it out. But I'm going to sign us off so we can chat more with these guys and have fun without you all here because we want to talk business. But this is Iggy signing off for Gallo for this episode of the Nerdcast. Head on over to projectnerd.com. That's Project hollywood-nerd.com for all of our great podcasts and web series. And of course, you can catch this as well as our other great original video content on our YouTube by searching Project Nerd. All right, now I'll sign off and let Gallo do his thing. All right, thanks, everybody. Thank you.